welcome to Linux in the Shell, episode 6. My name is Dan Washko, and today we are going to be talking about the pmount command. But before I do so, I want to remind you, read the full article over there at linuxintheshell.org, watch the video of examples of using the pmount command, and also, thank you, Hacker Public Radio, for supporting this show, and I hope you support Hacker Public Radio by listening and hopefully someday contributing. Well, pmount is one of my favorite commands. I've talked about this on some other shows I do, but I'm going to go through pmount at least one more time because I find it so versatile. If you use a desktop environment like GNOME, KDE, XFCE, you may be accustomed to when you plug in a flash device or pop in a CD that it auto mounts the device and it's available to your preferred file manager or for use, however you want to use it. Well, if you're on a lighter end system, maybe you don't want to run a heavy duty desktop environment, or maybe you're like me, you prefer to run something like Fluxbox most of the time, you don't get that easy auto mounting feature in those environments. Therefore, you have to find another way to mount your mass storage devices, and pmount is hands down probably the easiest method to get running. Chances are it's not installed by default in your distribution, but it's easily accessible by whatever package manager you use. I have not found a distribution, I should say a distribution that I use, Ubuntu, Debian, Arch, Fedora, Slackware, you name it, that does not have pmount accessible in some repository. So it should be quick to install. By default, out of the box, any user should be able to mount devices then, mount block devices that are removable storage. All pmount is pretty much a wrapper around mount that lets standard users mount devices. So once you get pmount installed, there used to be that you had to add people to the pmount group, but you don't have to do that in newer versions. You could just elicit or execute the pmount command, and you're good to go. Well, the device, of course, the device that you're trying to mount. Now, I said it mounts removable devices out of the box. To check if a device is a removable device, you can plug it in and then just issue the cat space slash sys slash block slash the device slash removable. And if the value that comes back is 1, it's a removable device. If it's 0, it's not. But if it comes back as a value of 1, pmount should be able to mount that without having to create the whitelist for the device. So devices that you want to mount or allow users to mount and unmount that are not removable devices, you can specify in the etc pmount.allow file, and that's the whitelist. Devices can be listed in there one at a time, like SDA, SDA1, SDA2, SDA3, or you can glob them together like SDA, open bracket, 1, 2, 3, close bracket, to achieve the same result. Now, again, make sure in that whitelist you're specifying the path to the device, so it would be dev SDA, not just SDA. So always put the path in there. Dev SDA, open bracket, 1, 2, 3, close bracket. You'll be good to go. So once a device is mountable, you might be asked, well, let's take a step back a second. How do you determine what the device is that you plug into the system if you don't know offhand? Well, that's really simple. Plug in a device, wait a couple seconds if it's a USB device, and then type the dmesg command. That's D-M-E-S-G. And at the end of that command, you should see the output showing you it found the USB mass storage device or some kind of device, and it's available now at some partition like dev SDA or SDB, actually. Dev SDB, SDB1. It'll list the partitions available to you. Again, depending on the device, how fast it is, whatnot, you might have to wait 2 or 3 seconds before it actually shows the device. All right, once you find the device number, once you plug the device, get everything going, it's a removable device, all you need to do is type in PMount path to the device. Like, for instance, I plug in my zip clip, it comes up as dev SDB for the zip internal flash and device SDC1 for the flash card that's in there, because it's partition 1. So I can type PMount slash dev slash SDB and hit enter. Devices are created, or device mount points are created, under slash media. So in my case here, I should find a device, if PMount was successful, under slash media slash SDB. Now, you could pass a label to PMount to use as the mount point, as opposed to using the device name. So I could have said PMount slash dev slash SDB clip zip, and it would mount it under media slash clip zip and be accessible to me that way. That's up to you. Now, once you have a device mounted, you want to probably know how to unmount it, and simple as issuing the PUMount command. So that's PUMount dev SDB or whatever your device is, and it will unmount it. Now, understand some of the default options in PMount when it mounts a device. If it's a flash device, it will mount it with the sync turned off, so it mounts it in async mode, asynchronous mode. What that means is a caching is implemented in a flash storage device. So if you are writing to the flash, it caches that write to the flash and doesn't perform it immediately. As you're working still, if you're copying files to it, it might appear to take a long time or a little while, like it's actually copying the device files straight to the device. But what is in reality is happening is it's copying it into their cache, and before you remove that device, you need to unmount it to make sure that everything is written from the cache to the device. Otherwise, there's an option that you could pass to mount it in synchronous mode, which means all operations to the disk will occur immediately, and that will increase your wait time performing any actions on that device, because it has to completely write everything to that device until it's finished. Now, if you're one who's prone to ripping out USB drives without unmounting them, maybe you want to turn on that dash S or sync option. The other mount options available that you can alter are the dash R read only, or the dash W or read write. You can pass those options. By default, devices are mounted read write. There's the dash A or no A time, which will mount a device without A time support. The default is A time. And there's also the dash E or dash dash execute, which mounts a device with execute bit set that you can execute programs or shell scripts off that device. Default is no X, no X not being able to execute those, so be aware of those options in there. Let's also talk about file system support. Pretty much all the file systems that you're going to use are supported by the PMount command, with the exception that I know of as of this writing, being ButterFS. It does not support ButterFS out of the box yet, but it will support, of course, EXT 2, 3, 4, RiserFS, RiserFS 4, XFS, JFS. It does NTFS, VFAT, UDF, HFS Plus, HFS, OMFS, and ISO 9660. So it'll probably do most of everything that you want it to do, except for ButterFS right now, unfortunately. So it does a good job at auto-detecting the file system. Unless the file system is borked, I've not had a problem with PMount detecting file systems for me. But you can pass the dash T or type option to PMount if you want to specify the file system on your own. UMask. The default UMask for PMount, like most Linux file system, is 022. So any files created in a Linux-based file system or most file systems that support a UMASC will be created with the 022. Now, just a reminder, to determine what permissions a UMASC maps to, a very simple equation. For files, it's 666 minus the UMASC, and for directories, it's 777 minus the UMASC. Very simple. So the default UMASC being 022 maps to files being created as 644, and that is read, write for the owner, read for everybody else. Directories are created with 755 UMASC, which equates to read, write, execute for the owner, and read and execute for everybody else. And remember, when talking about the executable bit on a directory, it's different than on a file. An executable bit in a directory dictates that a user can move into that directory or look at stuff inside that directory. It doesn't mean they can execute programs in that directory, but they can actually enter into that directory. Whereas an executable bit on a file means that they can actually run that file as a command. So those are the things to be aware of. Default UMASC for VFAT and NTFS files is always 077. You can change that if you want, which equates to files being created. The owner has read-write on files and read-write-execute on directories, and then nobody else has any permissions on there. So be aware of that. If you are mounting an encrypted file system, it will ask you for the passphrase to unencrypt it. You can also pass to that the -P or --- passphrase option and supply the file with the passphrase in there, should you want to. So there's that. There's a few other commands, but they go on beyond general usage. If you want to check out what those are, go to the man-pmount command. And remember, always unmount your devices before removing them from your system. So always type the pumount command to remove said device. The last thing I will say about pmount is that if you want to see what devices are mounted with pmount, currently type in pmount with no other options, and it will show you, just like the mount command, what devices are mounted with the pmount command. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you find pmount very useful. I caution you about installing it on a server-based system, but for a general use desktop, I found it invaluable to be able to mount removable file systems, particularly my ClipZip and other flash media devices, without having to do some funky configuration of the mount command or run an AutoFS or heavier desktop. My name is Dan Washko. You're listening to Linux in a Shell. Read all about the pmount command over on the website. Check out the example video. And thanks again to Hacker Public Radio for their support. See you in a fortnight.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.